Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm very pleased today to have a writer that I've been reading for a while but have never spoken to before. Her name is Matilda Bernstein Sycamore. Her newest book is The Freezer Door, and it's published by the wonderful press Semiotext, which has published so many of the books that have been crucial to our culture during the last 20 years. Now, Matilda, this book seems to be, in many ways, The Freezer Door, built upon improvisations. Is improvisation a manner by which you construct a book?
Absolutely. Whenever I start a new book, I start with no intention at all of where I'm going. So I just write and write and write. I put everything in one document. I put things that seem to be totally disparate thoughts, different experiences. With this book in particular, I probably wrote like that for about 2 years before I looked at it as a whole at all. Like, I wanted to wait until I felt that there was some kind of narrative flow coming from the text itself. Not something that I was imposing from the outside, but something that was coming internally until I looked at it as a whole. And maybe another year after that, or even more, before I really started to think of it as a book that I could recognize.
I've never been in Seattle. Why do they call it the Freeze?
Well, the Seattle Freeze, as I say in the book, to me, it's that white picket fence in the eyes. So it's when you're walking down the street, you see someone you know or someone you might like to talk to, and they just look right through you. Now, in Seattle, people rationalize that by saying it's the Nordic heritage. But Nordic heritage in Seattle is like less than 10%. There are more Jews in Seattle than people of Nordic heritage at this point, and no one talks about the Jewish heritage. So what it really is the gentrified gaze. So it's the way that people are refusing what to me is the dream of the city, right? The dream of the city is that you will find everyone and everything that you never imagined, not just what you imagined, but that unexpected encounter on the street that might change everything. And so in a way, in the book, I'm writing against that gentrified gaze, right? So the first line of the book is, one problem with gentrification is that it always gets worse. And so gentrification is the landscape in which the book takes place.
I've spent my whole life, for better or worse, in cities. I was born in New York City. And one of the things that gay people have done for many years is to escape the abuse of their family by moving to a city where they can find one another. And that, Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, is the way you spent a good portion of your life. And you suggest that that can no longer be true, that the cities are now so gentrified that the eyes are like a freezer door, that the soul is locked behind the eyes and is inaccessible to the person longing to meet a fellow soul on the street.
I think that's a really beautiful way to conjure what I'm evoking with the title. Yeah, like as queers, you know, I think for me, going, you know, escaping abusive homes, escaping cities where we couldn't be ourselves, escaping schools that, you know, didn't allow our full range of experience, and then finding one another, finding radical visions of living and lusting for and taking care of one another, not predicated on dominant norms of either gay or straight normalcy. And so for me, I think that, yes, the city now does foreclose those possibilities in so many ways of that sudden interaction of finding the people we didn't know we needed. But I don't think that means it's impossible, of course. And so in the book, I think I'm still trying to actualize that potential because it's the only way I can go on living, right?
As I was reading, I felt that in certain ways we were variants on the same person. And one of the things that I felt most deeply, I nearly dropped the book in astonishment, the most important person in my life as I was growing up was my grandmother. She lived with us. She came here from Russia, having escaped with her children in tow. My mother was the only one of those children to be born in America. And Grandma Rose lived with us and lived to be over 100. And she taught me how to play cat's cradle, which in Yiddish she called Edel Bedel. And she taught me, she was able, when she was making fresh juice in the morning, to juggle the oranges. She was the person who introduced me to the possibilities beyond the ordinary of the world. And it seems that you had a grandmother too. And in my wondering, as I always do, where did my guest come from? Where did Matilda Bernstein Sycamore come from? Is it possible to say that you came from your grandmother?
Oh, that's a great question. My grandmother was a visual artist. She was an abstract artist. And as a child, going into her studio was the one time that I could dream in everyday experience of a creative life because I was living it. And so as a child, she did really give me that possibility that was not, I mean, she saw sort of my creativity, my sensitivity, my femininity, my compassion, and saw those not as weaknesses, but as a connection to the world. And so definitely, and it's interesting because I'm actually working on a book now, which is called Touching the Art. And the book is about my relationship with my grandmother, both the relationship as a child, but then as an adult, when I was coming into myself, she basically tried to renounce everything about herself in order to get me to follow the narrow path of upward mobility that was everything that I was rejecting. So my dream of her as a child, what she gave me, you know, was this idea of living a creative life at all times, right? That was a myth. It wasn't just, but it still served me.
As you said just before, and you've said in the book as well, that your writing about sex disturbed her, but did your femininity disturb her? Did she, it sounds like she accepted that.
Yeah, it's so interesting because as a child, she really embraced everything that made me queer. And you know, I now know, I didn't really know this as a child, but her best friend was gay. He was a gay artist of her generation. The person who first told her she was an artist was also a gay artist. So she always had gay people in her life who were central. But I think what happened, or I know, you know, in a certain sense, is that when what she didn't, those, they were of her generation, right? And so, you know, she grew up, she was born in 1917. She's coming of age as an artist in the 50s, and she's an abstract artist. So she's in the modernist tradition where art should be pure, right? It should not, if it relates to personal experience, you should never see the personal, right? She loved my work that I wrote in high school, where I'm like writing a poem, you know, based on the wasteland or talking about, does God exist, you know, in this very grand modernist tradition. But as soon as it came into both, sexuality, but I think also politics, and also asserting a queer identity as a challenge to the world. But my work, what she would say again was that it was vulgar. And she would say, why are you wasting your talent?
I'm speaking, by the way, to Matilda Bernstein Sycamore. The book is called The Freezer Door. And I took the metaphor of the freezer door very strongly. Within the book has an ongoing dialogue between an ice cube tray and an ice cube. And, you know, I do think and agree that sometimes as ice cubes ourselves, we're held too firmly by the ice cube tray and we have to escape. But something about your grandmother, and let's face it, those people who were reading The Wasteland and were reading Ulysses and were reading the works of high modernism, they were experiencing them as very literary, but also very vulgar as well. In The Wasteland, T.S. Eliot reveals the difficulties both with his wife and the idea of fathering a child. It's a very scary poem about the possibilities of going on living. And one of the beautiful things about The Freezer Door, Matilda, is that you address the reader and remind the reader that there are difficulties in continuing to live, and that merely coming out as a gay person doesn't give you the language or the behavior to use in order to grow and change and allow the world to fully explore all of our possibilities, sexual, political, literary, and otherwise. It was what was so exciting to me about the book. Certain chapters are written over and over and over again in order to get the feeling in them correct. Tell me about that.
So in a way, I think the book is about desire and its impossibility. And I'm circling around my experiences in both past, present, in both dream and waking life, in search of that embodied truth. And so I want the text also to be searching for that. So the sentences themselves also circle around each other. And you mentioned the dialogue between the ice cube and the ice cube tray. So that first emerges after I reach a point where I think I say, I don't understand why nothing heals. And so the text can no longer hold that, right? So it has to move in this other direction. And so the conversation between the ice cube and the ice cube tray, who are like most ice cubes and ice cube trays, in the freezer with the door closed, ends up being a kind of reflection on the broader themes that are present in the book, but in a more, in some ways, condensed or simplified, or even maybe innocent way, where the ice cube might be asking questions of the ice cube tray, for example, explain gentrification to me. And the ice cube tray says, crushed ice. So everything becomes sort of embodied in a way that is external to the body of the text as a whole, but it's still that same search for, I guess, care through language in a world that does not allow that care to take place or to be recognized.
Yes.
Or acknowledged.
Well, I think it's absolutely brilliant that crushed ice is the gentrification of ice cubes, the fancy way of putting it, the new way of moving beyond the basic. But, and we are living in, as this book well explains, the age of gentrification. Our cities are being gentrified. The areas of our cities that were once devoted to culture and bohemianism, strangeness, originality, These are now being given over to reconstruction. The old and beautiful buildings where it was possible and cheap to live are being knocked down and replaced. Can you tell my listeners why you think this is happening, why this has become the version of our age, that we live in the gentrified age, and now even homosexuality involves a certain amount of gentrification, and your old-fashioned, dangerous, thrilling, feminized queer has virtually disappeared or been rejected?
Yeah, I think, gentrification to me is always about consolidation, about corporate profit, about property values over people's lives, and about smoothing or smothering anything that gets in the way of that. And so to me, the gentrification of cities is really that top-down mentality. I mean, it plays out in other ways, but you know, so much of it originated with white flight and with disinvestment. And now that cities have become places where people with power and affluence, who in the past might not have lived directly in cities, people without kind of like a larger lived experience or a search for something that might change them, they want the sort of tyranny of the suburban imagination over urban life. And so I think, but I think the possibility of cities is still that density of interaction, right? There always can be something in the gaps. And in the book, I kind of write toward those gaps. The only way that we can find something that will shift the boundaries or overrun the borders or dismantle the walls or crash the gates is if we move into those gaps and not exist or allow the sort of top-down, streamlined, homogenized mentality to invade our bodies and lives.
Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, I loved reading your book. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Matilda Bernstein Sycamore about her new book, The Freezer Door. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Matilda Bernstein Sycamore about her new book, The Freezer Door, a complex meditation on the trauma and possibility of searching for a human connection in the world of bland norms. There's a Matilda Bernstein Sycamore who's visiting parks and gay bars and places where public sex is possible. But there is also a Matilda Bernstein Sycamore who is writing this book and taking risks of restoring a liveliness, a depth of vulnerability to the gentrified life. How do you become the person who wrote this book?
Well, I think I became the person who wrote this book by perhaps moving to San Francisco when I was 19 in the early 90s in search of radical outsiders, in search of activists and dreamers and queers and sluts and whores and vegans and anarchists and dropouts and kids who had fled homes where we were abused or shunned or pushed out, or we had to run away, or we had fled other kinds of death, you know, you know, this sort of dream of normalcy. And we were rejecting all of that. And so I think for me, those were my formative moments. And that was really where I learned everything that enabled me to exist, to create a self and also a way of thinking communally that wasn't necessarily interested in dominant forms of acceptability and was interested in building a home on the fringes to challenge the violence of the violence and hypocrisy of the world around us. And so I feel like that is my starting place. And I think in the book, one of the things I'm sort of circling around or investigating is also not just that dream, but how that dream has also failed me.
I think that reading is a form of dreaming. And I think that you do too. I think that you grew up, like me, as a reader, so young that you grew to understand that it couldn't be separated from your dreams, that the books you love sometimes introduce you to the content of your dreams. What do you think?
Oh, I agree entirely. I mean, as a kid, I didn't have a way to escape, and so I escaped through books. And so I was the kid who would just read anything that was around me. You know, I would take, like when I was little, I might have, you know, someone gave me like the Hardy Boys or something. I would just read the whole series, you know. And then I think around fourth grade, there was a book fair at my school, and I just picked the largest book because I was like, that's the one I'm going to read. So that was Watership Down. And then by sixth grade, I was reading, I read War and Peace, I read Dostoevsky. In seventh grade, I read Budin books by Thomas Mann. Well, I wanted something I could disappear into.
My favorite books were not in the library. You were mentioning the Hardy Boys. They didn't, that was called a series book, and they didn't allow them in the libraries. They didn't keep them. And so my very favorite books, I think there were 13 or 14 Oz books by L. Frank Baum, and then the series was continued by other writers, but they weren't in the public library. They were in the first editions in the 42nd Street Library, you know, the ones with the lions in front, and the children's librarian would go up to the main research room to get me the first editions of the Oz books because they had colored plates, which for many, many years were never reprinted. And I would spend my days, when my mother was afraid of leaving me at home with my grandmother, in the library in Oz. But we were also on 42nd Street, where I could wander up and down and see the porno theaters and the porno bookstores and the strange novelty items. The whole world was open to me next door to the 42nd Street Library. And at least for me, the reading project led to an awareness of the largeness, the beauty, the strangeness, the unwordedness of the sexual world. Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, how did that world begin to find words for you?
As a kid, growing up, I was always the kid who was, you know, called sissy or called faggot or called girl. I was an outcast. And I sort of internalized.
And you know, me too. And I remember, Matilda, I was once walking on my way to the library. In order to get there, you would pass the high school, and these kids I would pass by would call me faggot. And instead of being hurt by this, I'd think, how did they know? All I was doing was walking. And this is the world that we've been, in a sense, condemned to. Other people got to define us and accuse us before we found ourselves.
Absolutely. And I had a very similar experience where kids at school for years would call me faggot. And then when I didn't really know what it was, actually. I mean, I knew that it meant that I was a girl, basically, and that I wasn't performing masculinity properly, and that I would never be part of the violence of straight masculinity. I would never be accepted in it. But the sexual aspect, I didn't really understand until the first sex ed class at my school. And when it was explained, you know, homosexuality is probably what they were saying. And I remember thinking that exactly what you just said. I was like, oh, well, that is what I am, but how do they know? And of course, it's gender that they saw and its connection to desire.
Some of that sexual, sensual awareness came to me last week while I was reading your book. We're always growing and changing. I am happy to be talking about The Freezer Door by Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, which I think is the newest chapter in the history of gay literature and philosophy, queer literature and philosophy, gender theory. I found what you're doing to be, I hope you'll pardon me, truly colossal. And thank you, Matilda.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great honor to be here with you today.
I hear that Matilda Bernstein Sycamore has been listening to Bookworm for years and years. It's a pleasure to have you on the show at last.
Oh, thank you. I'm so thrilled to finally be here and to be in conversation with you. And I can't wait to listen to this show and all the others.
Thank you. I've been talking with Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, author of The Freezer Door, published by Semia Text. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are taping each from our respective residences, so you may hear unusual, unradio studio-like sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to Bookworm show collaborators Alan Howard, Sean Sullivan, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.